Hey friends, welcome to another episode of Space for Life, and I think we're going to be in for an amazing time together. I have as a special guest today, David Osk, and did I pronounce that right, David?
You got
close
it.
Enough?
Yep.
Okay. It's spelled A-S-K, and I noticed in talking with you that you pronounce it differently. So before I get into all the introduction, what's behind the name?
You know, there's so my whole family heritage is Norwegian, and there's a town in Norway named Osk, which is kind of neat. I've never been there, but I plan to go there at some point.
Okay. All right, good. Well, we've got that behind us now. So David and I have just begun to get to know one another, and we connected through kind of a network of podcasters, and it's just been amazing just in the short amount of time that we've talked, just the degree of connectedness of just interests that we have, as well as kind of the passions that we have and the convictions that we have. And I think for those who have listened to some of these episodes of Space for Life, you're going to see real quickly that David and I are kindred spirits on a lot of this. So just to give you a little taste for that, David's background is quite amazing. I mean, he crosses so many different pathways. He is a longtime entrepreneur, creating a tremendous product that is in 3,700 retail stores. He also runs several mastermind groups, which I'm sure we'll hear more about. And he's a lead coach for an organization called True North Resiliency Program. So he does coaching. I think you do some podcasting too, don't you?
I do, yeah.
So some podcasting also. Of course, now we're really connected because he's also a passionate golfer. So we have so many different connections. Give you an idea about him. He shared with me that his life mission can be summed up in one of his favorite quotes. This is from Benjamin Disraeli. "The greatest good you can do for another is not to share with him your riches, but to reveal to him his own." Mm-hmm. And I think we're going to get a lot of flavor of kind of that heart and passion from David as we go forward. But one of the things that surprised me about David, as I kind of looked through some of his bio, kind of as a footnote to all of these other amazing things he did, he kind of just mentioned, you know, I also, as kind of one of my hobbies, I think he said, I sing a bit. And he said, if you're interested, here's a little clip on YouTube. So I clicked over to hear what I thought was just going to be a little hobby. And it was quite a bit more than that. And so I'm going to use the microphone on this, on what I'm doing for podcasting, to play just a short little clip of this guy that just does all these other things and has this little hobby of singing. So we'll see if we can get this to work, because I was frankly blown away. So here we go. Wow. I love that song. But that just blew me away. And come to find out, David has performed professionally in some amazing venues, which he can choose to tell you about or not, but you know, this is just going to be an amazing conversation. So I'm so excited to have you, David, as part of Space for Life podcast. And as I often do when I'm interviewing someone, I'd love for you to just begin by telling a little bit of your story. What's transpired to bring you to where you are today and to who you are today?
Man, well, first of all, thank you for having me. I so enjoyed the conversation that we had, you know, previous to the podcast here. And I knew, you know, within just a matter of a minute or so that we were kind of kindred spirits in a lot of ways and on a very similar mission in life. And so mm-hmm. I'll just kind of give kind of the high level. So I grew up in a little town in Minnesota called Glenwood, and it's just a fantastic place to, you know, to call home, really. I moved to Nashville back in 1994 and attended Belmont University here as a vocal major, and ended up moving here with my sister, Kirsten, who's an amazing vocalist, and her husband, who, you know, was my best friend and, you know, just a wonderful man to help us do all of our musical endeavors, you know, back in the day together. So we, you know, would hop in the van and pull the trailer with the lights and sound, and we'd go sing anywhere that they would, you know, they would want us, and Victor would run sound. And, you know, it was just those early years in music were a real family endeavor. What was interesting is, so Kirsten and Victor started having kids, and she really didn't want that life anymore. So, you know, I kind of, you know, in those early 20s, you know, kind of had to, I guess, reinvent myself, as it were, like, you know, what's important to me right now? What's mission critical? And I'll be honest, those years were kind of exciting in a lot of ways, but really, really difficult, because I battled with a lot of question marks, you know, inside of my head and heart, a ton of insecurity. And part of it too, at the time, was, you know, moving from a town of 2,500 people in one stoplight to Music City, USA. And everybody and their brother here is just an amazing talent in some way. It's really remarkable, the amount of people. And anyway, so what's interesting is even now I still have this, you know, this musical current that runs through, you know, my life. I still perform at a rather high level. You know, you mentioned, you know, some places. I'm staring at a non-disclosure agreement here on the wall that I can't mention. And I've not only been able to,
frankly, one of my favorite places in the universe. I'll leave it there.
You and me both. So what's fascinating is I have this musical, you know, kind of current running through my life where I get to do these really fun things with, you know, sometimes really famous people. And it's just, you know, I don't know, it's this wonderful creative outlet that I get to continue to use. And I'm realizing, though, that creativity is not just musical to me. And it really runs through, you know, several different areas in my life. So I'll kind of back into the story just a bit more this way. So in my early 30s, you know, I really started to kind of explore this idea of what would it mean, you know, to be an entrepreneur. And it, at the same time, you know, I didn't know what I didn't know. That insecurity still kind of was hanging out, like, you know, hey, these people who are doing these types of things, they just have the Midas touch, or they've got something that you don't. And, you know, just the typical lie that we often believe. And so I started diving into, you know, books and podcasts and just listening to, you know, to people that I, you know, thought were just operating at a kind of a higher level, maybe a deeper level is actually the word. And what I found out is that so many of them that I really respected, you know, who were kind of at the top of the game, as it were, they weren't, you know, hey, look at me, look at me. They actually talked so much about vulnerability, talked so much about mistakes, talked so much about, you know, learning the hard way. And
who were a few of those people, if you can recall, that you really resonated with?
Yeah. So, well, back in the day, I remember when Dave Ramsey first started his radio show, you know, I mean, he had lost everything and was kind of starting over, and I was turned on to, you know, his show. Well, he opened up a world to a lot of other, you know, people that he would interview on his podcast, you know, so guys like Dan Miller, you know, that wrote 48 Days to the Work You Love. And Dan actually passed away a few months ago. He became a dear friend of mine. And You know, I tell you what, I mean, there's just such a wide variety, but the common theme with all of these people was humility, vulnerability, and surrounding themselves, you know, with kind of like-minded, I'll put it this way, like-minded, generous spirits, you know, who were, it was like this, they had this contagiousness about forward progress and multiplying whatever's in their hands and helping those around them. Like their radar was always up, like, hey, what do you need? Hey, I think I got a guy, like I can help you do this or connect a dot for you. And so it really wasn't until my late 30s where I, you know, an idea presented itself for a business other than music, where I thought, you know what, I think this is something to kind of, you know, strike at here while the iron is hot. So my current business is a company called Quorum Global, and we manufacture just a couple of different products currently. We're developing several others right now. But my brother-in-law called me one day. He was living in South Florida. And at the time, I'm working for a large telecom chain doing facilities management. What was really, really great about that is it was a flexible schedule, so I could still continue to do music whenever I wanted. But, you know, when we get married and have kids, you want some consistent income and insurance and all that. And so he called me one day and he said, hey, David, he said, where do I get a thermostat cover with a combination lock? He said, all the people here keep losing those little keys. And, you know, for those listening, you probably have seen thermostat covers, you know, that go over a thermostat to prevent tampering. Right. Typically in a restaurant or an office or a public setting like that, a church or whatever else. But when he called and asked me, I knew instantly that this was like, it intrigued me, like a StatGuard with a combination lock. Because when I was working at Verizon, we use StatGuards everywhere, because if there's more than two people in a room, everybody's jacking around with a thermostat, and it would get really expensive. And they would often, you know, set it so low that it would freeze up the units, and then we'd have to send a technician out to see what's wrong with it. And there's nothing wrong with it, just be, you know, somebody set it at 61 degrees in July. And so anyway, we did some research and realized that no one made one. So he and I, at the time, this has been 12 years ago, we went into business together and developed the StatGuard Plus, which was the first thermostat guard in the world that had a combination lock. It was just kind of a better mousetrap situation. And a few years after, we honestly just fooled around. We had no idea what we were doing. You know, we did everything wrong, right? Build it and they will come is what we thought. And, you know, that's just not the case.
Sounds like an entrepreneur to me.
Yeah. You know, just jump into the deep end of the pool. And yeah. So anyway, I ended up buying him out a few years after we got started. He was running a construction company and doing really well. And it was interesting because, you know, about a year and a half after that, I got into Home Depot, and about a year and a half ago, got into Lowe's. And so we're actually just got into the True Value hardware distribution chain just a few weeks ago now as well. They're all independently owned, so we're going to be reaching out to the individual owners, of course. But yeah, it's been a really interesting entrepreneurial journey. But honestly, I mean, and you know well more than I do, there are obstacles in business, but the biggest obstacle is me. You know, it's the man in the mirror. It's believing things about others, about myself, about what's possible, and you know, all that kind of stuff that really is really the main obstacle.
Sure, and it's pushing through your own barriers. Yeah. Your own barriers of limitations and your own barriers that get in the way of success, you know, whether it's, you know, attitudes that you have or, you know, all sorts of things. Yeah. I mean, that is the battle of the entrepreneur, whether they want to acknowledge it or not.
Well, and part of it too was, you know, I had kind of this narrative inside of me that, you know, hey, you're a musician, you're a vocalist. You know, what gives you permission? Like I needed some permission from somebody out there to go do something else. And so what's really fascinating, of course, is you start getting a few wins and you realize, well, you don't have to ask permission from anybody. You know, it's that, and maybe I'm projecting that was, you know, kind of something that was, you know, a narrative inside of me. And but since then, now I'm, of course, I'm, you know, facilitating two mastermind groups inside of the Iron Sharpens Iron Mastermind. I'm doing life coaching. I'm writing a book. And, you know, the growth, the internal growth that I've experienced has really helped me to dial into, you know, more of a mission with, as far as, you know, kind of a legacy life mission type of an attitude, as opposed to survival mode. And I'm trying to, you know, get
right.
business off the ground and just, you know, make ends meet. And I'm so grateful that that process has brought me to, you know, to this space as a really deeper understanding of, you know, how I'm wired, what lights me up, and what's mission critical here. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's great. So I want to come back to kind of really the core of all that. But just for those listening, can you describe or define what a mastermind group is?
Yeah, sure. So yeah, it sounds kind of for people who have not heard of that, it sounds a little bit weird or something like that, you know, kind of a cult or something. But so Napoleon Hill, the guy that wrote Think and Grow Rich back in the, I don't know, 40s or 50s. I'm not even sure when that came out. He's the one who coined that term. And so, of course, there's all different types of mastermind groups out there. And largely, I think they're more just business oriented. And it's, we actually look at things from a more of a holistic perspective. So I like to tell people, you know, Iron Sharpens Iron Mastermind, you know, allows me to have a band of brothers for my personal life and a virtual board of directors, as it were, for my business. So the entire point, the entire point of this group is we're helping each other win. And whether that's in parenting or marriage or, you know, just life, you know, struggles and battles or business or, you know, profit and marketing strategies, you know, whatever you need. And on any level, we're diving in head first. And we meet every single week on a Zoom call. We meet twice a year in person at the very minimum. And it's been really life-changing. My business really started to take off when I got help, because, you know, at the very core, right, I didn't know what I didn't know. And it was amazing how many mistakes I was making, you know, without that support system.
Well, and it's a great image, you know, from Proverbs that's based on, as iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another, is this idea that when you bring a group of people together, you know, particularly in that kind of venue of transparency and vulnerability, that you become sharper, you know, in whatever venue you're looking to. And, you know, so to have a mastermind group, how many people in it?
So Aaron Walker is the one who started it. So Dave Ramsey had a mastermind group called the Eagle Group that, you know, a bunch of really great guys were in for about 25 years. So Aaron started ISI about 10 years ago, and I think we've got 160, and it's from, I don't know, 5 different countries.
You know, and how many in your group?
So I've got 2 groups that I lead, and there's 10 in each of those.
Okay. Wow. Huh. Yeah. So that's got to just create some amazing relationships. Yeah. I mean, that's powerful in and of itself.
Well, picture this too. You're sitting, you know, I liken it to the Knights at the Round Table, right? You have entered in a very tangible way to sit at a table with men who have a similar mission. And really, you would hope too, a similar humility and vulnerability, because what we're looking for in one another is, you know, the gaps, right? We're looking for weakness.
Right. Yeah.
And at the same time, we're honoring strength, you know, in the council of many, there's wisdom, right? Those types of personalities around a table, and it's the horsepower is unbelievable. I'm, for instance, the core group that I started in, you know, we've got a guy that owns a commercial construction company and does other types of investing. I've got a lawyer. I've got a clinical psychologist. I've got a guy that speaks on clarity, but to massive, you know, Fortune 100 companies. I've got a guy that builds robots for the Department of Defense, who's also one of the most spiritually in tune people I've ever met. I mean, it's so you pay to be there. But what you get in return, you know, I mean, I've quadrupled my income. my health is better. And, you know, because every week you're living really vulnerable with each other. And we're not being weird about anything, but it's just like, hey, how are you in this area? And if you're not doing well, man, that's fine. But what can we do to help you here? Where are those gaps?
Well, I love this idea. And it's not something that I really planned on us doing a deep dive in. But, you know, I think for those who are listening, there is a powerful opportunity here to say, you know, whether you're part of, you know, a formal mastermind or not, you know, what would happen if we created what could be thought of as a mutual personal board of directors,
yeah.
you know, a group of just five or six people that you said, look, we're going to just be supporters and encouragers and
right.
challengers into each other's life. And you met like that to just say, we're going to do whatever we can to be for one another.
Oh,
and
I love that.
The impact that could have.
Yeah.
In terms, I mean, you just can see it, a trajectory coming out of that simple choice, which is really what you've done. You have a structure and an organization associated with it, but I love that idea of, you know, and instead of maybe a personal board, this mutual personal board of directors where these people can be that for you and you can be that for them. So I really hope if people are listening that they might just pause for a moment and say, you know, that might be worth acting on. I really love that. That's great.
It's absolutely life changing.
So that's great. So then you have this other piece that is obviously really important to you with organization True North, and as a lead coach, and they have a resiliency program and a True North blueprint. Tell us a little bit about True North. But really kind of about how you feed into that and what you're doing there.
Sure. So Dr. Andy Garrett is a clinical psychologist. He is in my main mastermind group as well, and just a wonderful man. He's been a mentor to me in many ways, and he's a younger man than I am for that matter. But he's just a, you know, I'll put it this way. When people go through a fire, right? And I'm talking the fire, and you know that. You come out changed, and he's come out the other side of several fires, a different man, and has some insights on some things and some ways of explaining concepts that a lot of people make really complicated. You know, you mentioned just this idea of true north, you know, as opposed to, you know, magnetic north. If you go online and search in Google true north, there's going to be 1,000 you know things that come up. So the point that he's making with regards to why he chose True North is we inside of the True North blueprint, we really help people establish a plumb line. You know, so True North versus magnetic north, right? A magnetic north is like a compass. So if you're walking into a room or in, you know, across a valley, you know, you're holding a compass, it's reading the magnetic field.
Okay.
Well, it's kind of, you know, likened to our personalities in a lot of ways. If we enter a situation or a room, you know, we're reading the room, as it were. And if you don't have a radical clarity on what your plumb line is, and I'll get more into that in a second, you know, you're taking cues, as it were, from things and people around you, as opposed to understanding this is who I am. This is what I value. This is how I operate. This is the mission that I'm on. This is the outcome that I want. These are the things that I'm saying yes to and no to, because you've predetermined those things, as opposed to trying to react, you know, in a moment. And, you know, largely at that point, you're just people pleasing. So True North is like a GPS, you know, coordinates. It's absolutely drilled down, laser focused, you know, into, you know, who you are. And my role in this, and it's kind of pivoted lately. So I started writing a book recently here. I'm hoping to have it done this summer, called The Guardians of Grit. And this book will be largely toward dads, but it's really to anybody who's in an authority position, whether you're a parent, a mentor, a coach, a pastor, you know, something like that. And it basically I like to say this, you know, it introduces you to yourself, meaning, you know, you have a fingerprint, you know, and a retina scan, as it were, that's unique, but your soul, you know, has a print on it that's incredibly unique. And, you know, so for instance, if, you know, of course, this concept of core values is nothing new. Dr. Andy introduces this in a way that is actually a bit unique, but I like to take it a step further and get a little more personal and ask people that I'm coaching, you know, hey, Tommy, what does your core happen to value the most in life? And it's amazing, you know, when you ask someone, I'll put it this way. When you ask someone that question with a smile on your face, it starts to unlock some things in them that's really precious and beautiful and courageous and noble and kind and good, as opposed to this idea of just white knuckling it in life and trying to survive, which most people are.
And which amounts to guessing.
Yeah.
And, you know, I do something very similar, as we mentioned. You know, I call it, instead of core values, I call it guiding principles.
I like
and
that.
And the question I ask with kind of that same spirit that you're talking about is, you know, when it really comes down to it, what matters most deeply to you in life? And, you know, when you get at that and you start to think, no, not what just matters to me. A lot of things matter to me, but what matters most deeply to me? And you go through the process of identifying those unique things that matter deeply to you, that you want to shape and color everything that you're about, then it does. It begins to change the way you see everything else around you when you have that kind of clarity.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, and I love that word principles, by the way. What's interesting too is most people, you've probably heard this phrase, you know, we are not a human doing, but a human being.
Right.
And unless you've established, you know, those, I like to say, what is it that gives your goosebumps? You know, like I got that from a Nissan commercial, I think, but you know, like what is it that gets that lump in your throat? That's like, man, that stirs me. What is it that breaks your heart uniquely? What is it that, you know, makes you really furious uniquely? You know, for instance, when you do a core values assessment in the English language, anyway, there's, I think, around 80 different words that can describe core values. And there's some overlap, of course. But what's neat is if you ask someone to check off all the ones that resonate with them, then narrow that down to 20, then narrow that down to 10, now narrow that down to 5 or 6. It's absolutely astonishing how vastly different the hierarchy, you know, the priority level of those values are. And then when you start, you know, acting in alignment with those things, whether you're at the gas station, whether you're with your wife, you know, your colleagues or whatever that is, there's such a sense of continuity. You know, you start to feel, you know, that word, you know, we're earlier talking about the word authenticity, you start to feel authentic. And it's because you've identified, right, the word identity, you've identified what is absolutely bedrock core to not only who you are, but what does that look like and why, right? What are your motivations? What are your strengths? And this idea of virtues, which is an outward focused, you know, type of impact, the dent in the universe that you want to have uniquely. It's amazing when you get clarity on those things, how, you know, your resiliency starts to grow, your grit starts to grow, your genuineness, you just feel more natural in your own skin, as opposed to, you know, licking your finger, sticking it up in the air and wondering, well, if the wind blows from this direction, how am I going to just mitigate that, as opposed to grab the wind by the neck and throw it on the ground and speak your name. No. So this is who I am.
Yeah. So I'm curious whether you would agree with this, because the coaching and mentoring that I do is very, very much along the same lines that of what you're talking of, trying to guide people in these very same things. And the two things that I see as to why this doesn't happen more with people, why do they not go through this process. Even sometimes once they've heard about it, they still don't go through the process. The two things that stand out to me is, one, very few people make the space in their life to do this kind of deep work. So they don't disagree with the value of it, but when it comes to asking them to truly set aside the kind of quiet space to think on this level, they simply stop short. So that's one obstacle that I see. The second obstacle is that, you know, what you're suggesting, which I completely agree with, requires, in a sense, a self-image and a belief that you are worth something and that there is more to life. And to buy into that, I think for a lot of people, is incredibly scary.
Yeah.
And it seems so much easier and safer to just live the middle life, you know, of continuing forward. Don't ruffle too many feathers. Don't try things too bold. And to sit there and entertain the possibility that there might be something special about me creates the opportunity that you might find out that there's nothing special about you.
Yeah.
And that fear, I think that a lot of people has, kind of leads them to the conclusion, you know, that's just a little too good to be true. And I think I'm going to stay here. That's my sense, because I believe so much in what you're saying, and yet I still see so few people take the steps that you're talking about and that I would love to encourage people to, you know, really do this deep dive work into, you know, the unique way that we're, you know, created to be. You know, it's almost 139, you knit me together in my mother's womb. That's such an individual, personal, special thing that's being communicated there.
Yeah. Boy, what a man. Well said. So obviously I think the answer is maybe not, you know, super black and white. I think there's, you know, some gray area in how people experience, you know, life and how they would assess, how did I get here? How do I feel so generic? Why do I feel so empty? Why do I feel like I don't have any motivation? So let me back into this way. So, you know, the book that I'm writing, The Guardians of Grit, And one of the things that we distinguish in the book, and of course in True North, is, well, what is resiliency and what is grit and why are they different and how are they established? So I'll just make it real quick. Resiliency is bouncing back quickly. If you could just,
okay,
the shortest definition would be, if you're a resilient person, I bounce back quickly.
Okay.
You know, you get punched in the face or whatever, you get knocked down, you get back up quicker than not. If I'm becoming more resilient, I'm getting up quicker and quicker, right?
Very valuable.
So whereas grit is, and I think Angela Duckworth is the one who kind of maybe coined this term or the definition, it's like doing hard things over a long period of time, because what's on the other side of the hill is worth fighting for. You know, you have a mission over here that it's difficult. And by the way, a long period of time, depending on what the circumstance might be 2 weeks. It might be three months or a year or 10 years. I don't know. It really depends on what you're trying to build or accomplish. And so what's fascinating, though, is if you're like me, the guy that wrote Wild at Heart, John Eldridge, he said that most men's definition of success in life is, you know, well, at least I didn't completely blow it. and that's it, right? I stayed married, although that was a real slog. My kids don't hate me. You know, I'm not eating Elpo dog food when I retired. And, you know, I've got a couple of buddies to drink some beer with. You know, I didn't completely blow it. And so what's interesting is I think that this idea of having a vision, a definition of success, as it were, that is true, is absolutely vital. And most of us, you know, even as a Christian, I I grew up where, you know, nothing against my parents or any leaders back then, but the way that, I intuited life was my identity was summed up in one phrase, you know, your identity is in Christ. Okay. But the message behind that even was, is you're a horrible sinner in need of grace. Christ had to die on the cross for you. You can come into the room, but go sit over there and don't make much noise. Like just be.
Wow. That's really, that's actually very profound, because that's a subtle type of message that is such a distortion.
Yeah.
But yet it is that subtle in between the lines message that I think a lot of really good people who profess to be Christians have subtly adopted in their lives.
So what if, right? And you kind of brought this up. What if it's too good to be true? So what if I look at my son Parker, who's 18 years old, and I've done this since he was born, and I look at Parker and I grab his face in my hands and I just say, you're the most precious man on earth to me. And I would take a bullet for you. And I mean, just like, I just absolutely delight in you. You're the object of my delight. You're my beloved son. And whatever you're into, I'm into. Whatever you're for, I'm for, and because I'm for you. And whatever lights you up, let's be about it. You know, it's not to say that, you know, over the years, you don't buck heads with each other, but the main mission that I want for my son and my daughter, for that matter, that I believe now that God has just screaming to us, is that I think you are made of something absolutely spectacular, and I want to name it, discover it, mine for gold, bring it forth, validate it, encourage it, and shine a spotlight on it until you don't have any breath left in your lungs till the day you die. And yeah, there's pitfalls. Yes, there are areas in your life that would, you know, if you choose to be selfish and, you know, act in discordant ways with, you know, true nature, right? With what God put into being here.
True north, yeah.
Your life's going to suck and everybody around you is going to hate you. But if you operate in an honorable and virtuous and courageous and humble and vulnerable way, your life is largely going to be rich. It might not be easy, but it's going to be rich and full. So my story, Tommy, was growing up, I mean, my dad he's a great man. He's kind and good, and he worked his butt off. But, you know, admittedly, he was a workaholic. His definition of success is, I'm going to outwork everybody around me. And if I'm not working, I'm useless. I'm not worth anything. And I don't know where he got that message, but that's, I think, common right. for his generation, for that matter. And so what was interesting is this vague idea that I got about just being a human, let alone a masculine man, was don't cry, don't talk about your feelings, work really hard, joke sexually about women, work really hard, be nice, don't be mean.
Work really hard.
You know what I mean? It's like, it was just the same drum of don't be a jerk, be really nice. And by the way, if there's folding chairs that need to be folded, you better be the first one grabbing chairs. That was the definition of masculinity and what it even looked like to serve. And what I'm realizing, you know, as I've gotten older is the why do we love the Knights at the Round Table, right? Why do we love the stories of the hero, you know, of the one who brings wisdom and courage and honor and dignity and life to a room? It's because we all long to be him. Why? Mm-hmm. Because we're made in his image, period. Right. And end of story. And I just get absolutely, you know, with regards to my purpose, right? My buddy Clinton Hafner, I got to read it early. He's not released the book yet, but he said a kind of a simple way to understand who you are, you know, as far as purpose goes. He said, what is it that, you know, just infuriates you, you know, about what's happening in the world? What is it that breaks your heart? And then I'll take it a step further. What is it that when you're doing it, you know, gives your goosebumps?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I can do this all day long because I'm bringing the full weight of my essence to bear on these people in this room. And when I'm doing this, I feel like I'm flying. And for me, largely, you know, my core values are God first and foremost, inspiration. I love the word inspire. It means to breathe life into.
Mm-hmm.
Community, people, impact. And here's wisdom. And then I actually added a sixth one when I was going through Andy's program. And this was a hard one for me. And I'll tell you why. My sixth core value is beauty. And I, you know, I think for a lot of men, you know, we might acknowledge beauty like in women or something, right? She's hot or something like that. That's the extent of it. But I realized that I love beautiful anything. And I mean, I can stand in front of a painting, you know, and I mean, we've been able to travel some, and I've seen some of the great works of art, and they just, you know, they make me weep. And I've not been able to kind of just admit that out loud because I was, again, just insecure about my own essence, who I am, masculinity, the whole nine yards. And now that I've identified, right, identity, what my absolute plumb line and true north is, I'm not looking for fulfillment anymore. I'm not looking to, you know, when I got my product into Home Depot and Lowe's and all some of these accomplishments in the past, I'd want to, you know, kind of humble brag or get them out there because I wanted other people to kind of validate that insecurity in me. And again, I'm not perfect, but largely I'm not looking for external fulfillment. I'm bringing the full weight of who I am just to experience fulfillment, but I'm not looking for it anymore. And to me, that is the definition of a mature human being. You are bringing your core. And I'm talking, again, values, virtues, strengths, goosebumps, all of that stuff to bear wherever you are in a consistent manner. And I get really excited about teaching people how to do that.
So, you know, people do this differently. For you, is there a difference between what you see as your purpose, your life mission, and your core values?
My purpose and my core values. Well, I guess purpose is really on how the core values are played out. So that would look different for everybody. So for instance, you know, my core values would be, you know, God, inspiration, community, impact, wisdom, beauty. Well, I would hope that I would be using my core values wherever I am. With regards to how do I want to spend most of my time, you know, it's sitting with anybody. You know, I'm talking mainly moms and dads, and hopefully they'll usher their own children into this space. But it's introducing them to themselves, right? I'm not going to tell someone else what to believe. So my purpose is really ultimately asking really great questions, which I think is really biblical in a way. And then
it's very interesting because I've at least for me personally, this is my working out of it. You know, I have a list of my guiding principles, have six. It was five, and I just added one recently. They have some similarities in terms of the process. I do the process a little bit differently. I kind of created it.
Sure.
I have an online process to help people do it.
Yeah.
But my purpose statement is different from my core values. It's a separate thing. It has a lot of the flavors and of the core values, but it's something different. But regardless of how we do it, again, I think it's almost like we were talking about earlier with this idea of a personal board of directors. You know, these become, you know, a North Star for us, a true North for us, as we have people in our life who fill this place for us, our personal board of directors, our core people, as we identify with specificity, core values, guiding principles, as we identify with clarity who we believe God created us to be, and what he created us to do, it then, you know, the rest of life is just executing on that truth.
Yeah. You know? And by the way, I'd love to revisit one of your other questions was, you know, why don't people do this? Yeah. Because sometimes they will go through the exercises and they just chuck it in a file cabinet and that's the end of it. And it kind of felt good for a day. But you know what? We weren't meant to establish authenticity, right? Authorship and identity in a silo or on an island. You know, it's meant to, the entire point of life, period, is about relationships. The rest of it is just a context. And so what does that mean? It means that in an ideal world, right, your parents, you know, in a family that's intact, your parents would have raised you in that way. It would have been very natural for them to be talking about your values. And hey, by the way, you know, David, when I saw you act in this way on the ball field yesterday, I could tell that was one of your core values. And they validate the goodness that they start seeing as it rises up. So it's a very natural progress. But since so many of us didn't get that, and we grew up in families that were in absolute survival mode, we now have to be strategic about, you know, getting the right people around us. So in ISI, right, my board of directors, quite often, they're just holding up a mirror to me when the wind is blowing and I'm struggling. They're like, hey, David, you know, let me remind you of something. Let me read your label for you. You know, I'm inside the peanut butter jar and I can't read the label. So when I'm getting kind of flustered and the cortisol is rising up, my adrenaline's going, I just lost an account, or I've got shipping problems, or COVID hit, or, you know, parental problems, whatever it might be, I cannot run my life in isolation. It doesn't work. You have to establish those things, but you have to, in an equal measure, have people around you who love you. And again, that word to some people might be a horrible word, because the same person that said, I love you, was the same person, you know, slapping them around. But to me, again, love looks like honesty, integrity, that mirror with a smile next to it and being like, you know, hey, buddy, do you see this? Let me remind you who you are. Oh, man, thank you so much. I forgot. And we have to have that community. So yes, we have to establish those things in radical clarity in the English language or whatever language you speak. But then we also have to have a tribe of people. And maybe that's just two or three. Maybe it's not like me and I've got, you know, 150. Right. But, man, you know,
people.
That's right. But you have to have someone, you know, who, you know, those 3 o'clock in the morning people, right? Those people who are actually reaching out to you and saying, you know, hey, we haven't talked in a couple of days. What's going on? Give me a temperature. Give me, you know, 1 to 10. Where are you right now? You know?
Well, and I think to that very point, had an episode about this early on Space for Life on the epidemic of loneliness and friendship. And what I've heard very often, as I've listened to a lot of podcasts about longevity, is that the real epidemic of aging is loneliness. That as people get older, their worlds, their community gets smaller and smaller and smaller, and that siphoning down of those relationships, in essence, kind of chokes the life out of people as they age. And so, you know, one of the things I believe in is that as I age, and I'm getting up there, as I age, it is all the more important for me to develop both breadth and depth of relationship in order to be well. And as an introvert, that's not easy, but that's like one of the big calls at this stage of life, when you're out of the rat race of, you know, working 40 to 60 hours a week, and your kids have flown the coop, so to speak, and everything else, then what's left is those relationships. And you know, building that is so important. So I really appreciate what you're saying.
I'm gonna share something with you that I didn't mention yet. And this is the reason that I'm on this podcast right now. The title of your podcast, Space for Life. I was talking to a counselor, a friend of mine. This is years ago, when I was just really struggling with massive anxiety, and you know, probably having minor panic attacks and just not sleeping and so on. This is back in my early 30s. And I remember the counselor talking about people who have been through trauma in their life, you know, some pretty deep stuff. And she would have them lay on the floor in her counseling office and, you know, just say, you know, put yourself in a position as to how you feel right now. And quite often they'd roll on one side or the other and get really small, you know, kind of curl up in a ball.
Yeah.
And she'd say, you know, that's not small enough. Get as small as you possibly can. And then she'd smile at him and say, all right, now take up as much room as you can. You know, take up as much space as you possibly can. And, you know, they'd you know, extend their arms and legs, whatever. She goes, that's not enough. I mean, and they're just stretching and they're getting their fingers as wide as they possibly can and arching and just, you know, more. You know, it's okay. You can take up as much space as you possibly want here. And what I think, you know, back to your question about why don't people do this, is I think that life is freaking hard.
Yeah.
And not only are we kicking our own butts, you know, we have an enemy who's whispering in our ear all day long. We've been through stuff that is just, sometimes there's no category for it. Sometimes we can't explain it. And so what we see is our literal physical postures start to shrink. You can watch people who are, you know, walk around a high school for that matter. And you'll see, you know, kids, you know, with their shoulders kind of, you know, turned in and hunched down. And it's like they're literally, their spirit inside is telling their body, you don't belong here.
And their eyes are always looking down.
Yeah. And they're trying to take up as little space as they possibly can, as opposed to Dr. Andy, he says he uses the term authentic exemplar. You know, so someone who's operating in their authenticity. In fact, in my podcast, I start out the podcast with, you know, there are some people who walk into the room and the room instantly gets better, wiser, safer, and stronger. Why is that? Well, someone who, again, understands how they're woven, what impact they want to have, what gives them goosebumps, what mission they're on, you know, what makes them laugh, all the stuff that makes them themselves. They walk into a room and they're not shrinking. I mean, it's not like they're gregarious and trying to make a spectacle and have some weird agenda, but you can tell that when someone who feels rather comfortable in their own skin, you know, they walk into the room and their shoulders are back and they're kind of surveying like, you know, hey, what's going on here? And quite often they're looking for the loneliest person in the room. Yeah. You know, I wonder what's going on with that guy. I think I'm going to go, you know, pour a little bit of cold water on that soul over there. I mean, and the reason is because they're full. They're not looking for anything. And I would dare say that 95% of the people that I come in contact with are white knuckling it. It's survival mode. They're empty. They have no idea who they are or even why they got out of bed in the morning. And if you're a parent and that describes you right now, please do some deep work so that your kids don't turn into another version of you. Because you know full well that you look in the mirror and you're just disgusted. It doesn't have to be that way. In fact, the opposite is true. You're made of awesome. You're made of something spectacular. And when you start to identify that in a really clear, normal way and hang out with really clear, normal, you know, functioning people, life starts to get really great and precious and your relationships grow, your world spans, your body literally tends to open up, your shoulders go back, you're surveying the room. Who needs me right now? Because I'm overflowing.
Oh, I love that. That's really... that is so powerful. And just the possibility, I come back to this phrase that we just threw out earlier, I think is what I'm going to call this podcast episode, Too Good to Be True. It just, you know, it just, we've been beaten down so much by the realities and the hard of life. Yeah. But yet there is so much good that is, you know, there for us.
So here's what's interesting. My daughter is 17 and she's just borderline perfect. She's just absolutely wonderful. I'm not joking. She's you know, she plays at the Vanderbilt Children's Orchestra, first chair. She's first chair in Mid-State and All-State. She's an artist. She's writing now. She loves people. Kate always looks for the lonely one in the room. she just has such a good heart. And at the same time, she's 17 and she struggles. And I asked her, I said, Kate, do me a favor. And I gave her a big hug and we sat down and I said, write a letter to yourself from God and write what you would dream that he would tell you right now. And she had a hard time doing it. But guess what? When she was done, of course, I read it. And I'm like, you just heard from the Holy Spirit. This is exactly what God would tell you right now. This is it, Kate. You found it. This is your manifesto from the great author who wove beautiful authenticity into you. Now you get to live in authority in your own skin just by being yourself. It's all true, sweetheart. And she just, you know, got the biggest smile on her face and gave me a hug. But that's it. This is the Guardians of Grit movement here, right? Hmm. I'm not trying to do this rah, 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 be a great dad, throw the ball around and take your kids to Disney World and be miserable for a week. No, I'm talking about those moments on the couch when you know that you need to hear this as well. Enter into the deep waters with your family, with those on your team, those under your care, and start validating authenticity, validating identity, you know, get behind the riches that you see in someone else and just start talking about it. That's the stuff of life.
Wow. Thank you. That's powerful. It's just words we all so deeply need to hear for ourselves, yes, as well as to share with others
every day.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, we've bounced around a lot of different places, but there's so many nuggets that I hope that people will maybe come back to and listen to and say, you know, I don't want to just hear this. I want to hear it and I want to act on these things, this personal board of directors, this identifying your core values, your team. There's so many important things in here. But so two last things that I guess I want to kind of try to close out with. You know, you coach a lot of people as I do, and you encourage a lot of people. This is a really tough one. But if you add one thing to say to someone, and what would be your one encouragement or challenge that perhaps rises above the others of just say, you know, if I could dream and I could just say, ask everybody to do this one thing, is there one thing that would jump off the page for you? How's that for a hard one?
Yeah, you know what? I think I would go back to, and again, I know people have got a view of God that is vastly different from mine. Mm-hmm. But if you can quiet yourself just enough and let your heart go there, I would say, if you were to write a letter to yourself from God, what would you dream that he would say about you?
Wow. All right, that's an action item. That's an action item. You know, it's scary to do that. It's daunting. It creates all sorts of doubt, but just do it anyway. Yeah.
Do it anyway. And here's something else too. I'll just say it this way as we kind of close out. I believe, and I'm kind of joking, but not really. I believe that I am the best encourager in the world. And I love to loan courage to people. And so if there's something that I can do for you, no strings attached, you know, just let me know and I will do my best.
Yeah, that's great. I remember teaching a group and teaching them on encouragement, I just said, you know, the reality is the word encouragement simply means to put courage in.
Yeah.
Put courage in.
Isn't that someone. Great?
And that's just, it's a powerful, it's a neat concept. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you. This has been a rich, rich conversation. I'd love to be able to share with people how they might connect with you, with True North, with the ISI Masterminds, with whatever you would like to share, and I'll put this in the show notes.
Yeah.
It's just been fantastic. How do people connect with you?
Thank you. Yeah. So yeah, my business, if you want to go to statguardplus.com, that's how I pay my bills, or lockboxpro.com. That's a new one that just launched. My website is davidask.com, and my contact information is on there as well. So yeah, if you want to reach out, I'll be happy to connect whatever dots I can.
That's great. Well, this has been a privilege and a joy, and I'm actually looking forward to however we choose to stay connected, because there's just too much in common for this to just be a one and done type of thing. So
great.
Thanks so much. I really hope, I don't think I even need to say this, that those who are listening to this will share this episode with someone that you need to put courage in, someone that you need to encourage, that you will share this episode with them, clips that this is really worth listening to. So thank you, David, so much for your time. It's great. Thanks. Thanks, everyone. Thanks for listening.